Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont. For more information, visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your host for this live show on all things fermentable. Man, I'm gone 1 week and I don't remember what to say. Anyway, I'm very glad to be back. I missed last week's show, which was an excellent show. And we have a great show for you tonight, but we have a couple of announcements first.
What are those announcements, Mary?
Well, what's going on tomorrow night at 508?
Oh, at 508. Speaking of pumpkin, we talked about it last week. We are launching a pumpkin beer, a pumpkin saison, that I brewed with Nick Ladd, Gregory Boland, and Chris Pagnotta, all of the New York City Home Brewers Guild. And we are very, very excited about that. But also, our friends from Finback Brewing Company, a new brewery that's opening up in Queens, we did a collaboration as well, and it's called Baby's Got Finback, and it is a lychee and smoked black tea pale ale, which is pretty fun. And the pumpkin beer is called Hello Gorgeous. Get it? Gorgeous.
So that releases tomorrow. The beers will be on tap after, definitely by 5.
Yeah.
Beers are $5 all night, because...
At the bar,
because Tuesday is Tuesday, and then you'll be playing.
I'll be playing saxophone tomorrow. I'm very excited about that with some very dear friends from 8 to 10.
Yep.
That's a lot.
Yeah, come on out. It'll be a good time. There'll be a lot of friendly faces there. Good way to meet people. Oh, next. What else is going on? This Saturday is Brooklyn Pour, which is put on by the Village Voice. It's in the beautiful former Williamsburg Bank building, now called One Hanson Place, that big clock tower in near Fort Greene, border Fort Greene, Borum Hill. And Chris and I will both be speaking there. Chris is going to be pouring his beers from 508 Gastrobrewery. I'm going to be speaking, actually, we're both going to be speaking on urban brewing. And then Chris is going to be talking about the state of brewing in New York.
That's right.
City.
State of brewing right now and what's going on in New York City in particular and how fun it is and the great community we have. And New York is definitely on the rise. A lot of really fun stuff happening here.
Yep. And that's from 3 to 6 p.m. Tickets are still available, and your ticket will get you into the talks if you want to. Otherwise, they're going to have lots of samples of breweries from all over the city.
And an awesome state old building.
Country. And that building is absolutely gorgeous. So if I could drink any beer anywhere, it would be there, let me tell you. November 5th, I'm going to give my first class at Brooklyn Homebrew on alternative fermentation. Tickets went up today. It's $40. I'm going to cover water kefir, whey fermented soda, how to culture your own kombucha SCOBY, et cetera, et cetera. It'll be a great class. Check out brooklyn-homebrew.com if you're interested in attending. And November 2nd is the New York City's Homebrewers Guild 25th anniversary party at Brooklyn Brewery from 9 to midnight. Correct?
From 9 to midnight, and we have about 14 booths, all including the local homebrew stores and a lot of the local homebrew clubs. Your admission ticket, $25 for 25 years. We'll cover your free samples of all this really, really fun ingenuity.
Yeah, we have local. 60 brewers signed up so far to pour kegs, and I think that there are pour kegs or bottles of great homebrew, and I think there'll probably be a few more. Chris and I are both brewing for it.
And that'll come with the 25th anniversary glass. It's going to be really awesome. Of course, the Brooklyn Brewery beers will be there, and so will one of our founding members, Garrett Oliver, who's now brewmaster at the Brooklyn Brewery, so we're very excited about that. And the guy who put out the call for it, Morgan Wright, is coming down from upstate, and we're super excited about that because the Guild for a long time was the only club in New York City, and we just have a lot of history in that. But more importantly, probably the biggest announcement we have today is the change in our event for Choctoberfest. We've decided to delay that in no small part because of it being so close to the New York City Homebrewers Guild party.
The Staten Island Fest before that, which also has a homebrew comp.
And the limited amount of time there is to kind of brew with chocolate before that. So we're postponing that to December. Stay tuned for more details, but this gives everybody more time to plan.
Exactly. So tonight we have our good friend Peter Kennedy of Simply Beer, Iron Brewer, homebrew the perfect jockey box. And we've known you for a couple of years now.
It's been a while now.
Yep. And it's always been a thrill to have your beer at either, you know, some of the Get Real Fest that you poured at. I know that you poured a delicious beer at one of the Brooklyn Brewery things that we participated in one time.
Pushing the envelope to different stuff.
Exactly. I mean,
everything from bacon beers to...
NHC.
Yeah, I had the bacon beer at NHC. That was a big hit.
We spoke about that on the show here. Let's dive right to that real quick. Yep. I want to dive right to the bacon beer. What do you mean bacon beer?
Well, everybody calls smoked beer bacon beer.
Mm-hmm.
Where this beer was not a smoked beer. There was no smoke malt in it at all. It was basically bacon. And more bacon. So I put bacon in the boil. I put bacon
and cooked
grease.
Bacon, right?
I put bacon grease. So I cooked the bacon, took the grease, added it to the boil.
Right. So right? There wasn't the bacon. There was the bacon fat. Bacon
just
grease,
the bacon fat, right? Right at the end of the boil.
What did that look like?
It made a mess. It made a mess of my chill plate. It made a mess of my boil kettle. It made a mess of my my primary. I mean, it was just a mess everywhere. And so in order to get all that grease out of the beer, so right after the boil, I chill it down to about 30 degrees. And so that way the oil in there will come up and separate out from the beer, and then I can rack it off and warm it up and start fermenting.
So wait, did the bacon fat actually rise to the top, or
did it
fall to the
bottom? Yeah, it solidifies on top.
Okay, on top.
You just poke right through it with your racking cane and
pull it up.
And you pull it up, yeah. Awesome. And it leaves a big, giant mess. But if I'm not done there, though, after that, once you're ready to serve this beer has about a lifespan of about 5 days. So if you don't drink it within that amount of time, it's going to spoil. Because what I do is I put 3 pounds of that bacon that I got the grease from in the secondary right as I served it. So as you're serving it,
wait, so did you put it in the keg?
In the keg.
Okay.
In the keg. As you're serving it, there's 3 pounds of bacon.
Those are bacon solids.
Yeah.
Okay.
The good stuff. And so I let it sit in the keg for 4 or 5 days before I serve it, and then it's got to be all drunk that one serving.
Right.
And it works out beautifully.
How
everybody
strong
loves it.
Was the beer?
It's about 5.5-6% brown ale.
Do you think it would last longer if you did have it strong, like stronger? You know,
I think there's just so
much.
If
you went for a 10%, or do you think that would preserve the bacon a little bit more?
You know, it's just bacon spoils.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of, as it's sitting in there, I mean, you don't even want to look at it once you're done drinking it.
Right.
But, you know, it's not a pretty sight after it's done.
And that was poured at NHC.
That was poured at NHC.
Yeah, because I ran into Chris.
Yeah.
I hadn't made it around to that area yet, and I ran into Chris, and he's like, you have to taste this. It's Peter Kennedy's bacon beer. Or no, I think you didn't even tell me what it was. You were like, taste this. Tell me what you think. But
I
mean, it was great.
I actually ran out of that beer that night.
Awesome.
A whole keg was drunk that night, you know, which is pretty good, seeing every other keg I brought, you know, only like, you know, maybe half a gallon of it was used.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of good beer on that floor.
Yeah, yeah, there was a lot of leftovers.
Well, that's very inspiring.
I want to go backward just a little bit again to get that process together. I didn't compute entirely. So you finished the boil. You had all the bacon fat in the boil, and you then cold crashed it to
right
30 degrees so it didn't freeze, or like it was on its way to freezing.
Mm-hmm.
But once you saw that the bacon grease had solidified, that's when you
so
scooped it off.
I cooled it down through my chill plate down as far, probably about 45 degrees, about as cold as I can get it, running ice water in the opposite direction. Then I put it in my fridge and get it down to about 30 degrees, which is probably about an overnight process.
That's what I'm getting.
And then as that happens, the grease in the beer actually solidifies, becomes a solid, and ends up floating up to the top. And so then you can siphon out the beer underneath it, and you probably get about 95% of the grease out of the beer that way.
And then did you heat that liquid up again to get it up to 68 degrees or whatever?
I
wherever
just
you
let it naturally pitched and let it come up to temperature.
You pitched while it was at
30
degrees or whatever?
I pitched probably about 45 degrees.
Okay.
Did you notice anything different in your yeast behavior?
It was, well, here's the thing.
It was a lag.
You can't tell because there's still so much grease left in there. You get no krausen.
Okay.
And but what happened once the yeast got going... at one point, my airlock was pegged at the top of the bubbler, and it was just spurting out liquid.
Yeah.
You know, it was going pretty ferociously for a while. And I think that's the oil, the grease, and the beer actually enhances that production.
of carbon dioxide and alcohol?
Yeah, the way the yeast is going.
Interesting.
You know, because every time I do a beer that has some sort of greasy element to it, it really, the yeast activity just spins off the chart. You know, you do a lot of, we just talk about chocolate. Do a lot of Keiko nibs. I mean, there's that grease on it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to, I get more active fermentation.
And you still, like, when you use a lot of cocoa nibs, do you see a grease layer on top? I mean, kind of like a shiny, can you tell?
Yeah, I think you get a little bit, but I really don't pay too much attention to it.
You
just kind of let it go.
You had a head on that beard.
Oh, yeah.
You overcarbonated to get it to compensate.
And I also put a lot of Munich and Vienna malt in there to try to, get that head retention without adding crystal malts in there. It's definitely a fun beer to make, it's great. If I was able to make the Brooklyn, your 25th guild party, I'd be making the bacon beer for that.
I'm sad you won't be making
it. I might be have to make a Peter Kennedy inspired bacon peanut butter beer.
There you go.
We have that PB2 powder at home.
That's right.
I've used that before too.
How do you use it? How do you use the PB2 powder?
Well, I added it straight in to the secondary.
Okay.
And it seemed to work fairly well. Peanut butter porter, or I used to make it. I don't quite make it anymore.
That was delicious, though.
But I've used...
So, hold on. Just for whoever's listening, what is PB2 powder?
It's basically powdered peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
One of these peanut farms in Georgia or someplace, basically they dehydrate everything. You just add water and you can make peanut butter.
Right.
Yeah. And it's less... It's not... It doesn't have the grease that... Using regular peanut butter, I think it's a little less messy.
Yeah, it's a little less messy.
And you can order it online. I found it actually in Kalushian, so you can get it at health food or kind of fancy.
And you can also, they also have a version of it with chocolate in it, too.
You can get PB2 chocolate?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nice. PB2 chocolate. And I've tried using de-oiling peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
I've used the PB2, and I've used peanuts. And I think peanuts gets you the quickest, fastest peanut butter flavor.
The whole peanut or just the shells? Or
I crushed a loose chop of the peanuts.
Of the whole peanuts or just
the inside.
Nuts. Okay.
Yeah, just inside. I go to Whole Foods and get the Valencia peanuts that you can buy to make peanut butter with.
Mm-hmm.
And then just crush them with a meat tenderizer.
Nice.
And throw them in. And really, 18 hours and you're going to get a ton of flavor.
And that's in secondary.
In the secondary, okay. Yeah. I mean, it does not take long for that peanut flavor to get right into that beer.
Yeah.
It can get overwhelming, real quick.
I love that.
So let's talk about Iron Brewer. Let's start the discussion.
Speaking of these crazy
ingredients. Yeah, speaking of all these crazy ingredients.
So, Iron Brewer. Now, I love all the home brewing competitions that are out there, and I try to participate in them when I can. But what I found is that my beers tend not to fall into style guidelines, and it got kind of frustrating, always getting bad feedback, or not bad feedback, but low scores, not winning. I'm a competitive person. I like to win. About 5 years ago, a bunch of bloggers, we decided to do a beer off, and we all came up with the same recipe, and everybody changed one ingredient, and we brewed it and shared it with everybody. It was a lot of fun. And so then I took that kind of one step further and said, these are the three ingredients you have to use, and now make a beer with them. Any kind of beer, any style, it's not, can't be a Braggot, a Groot, mead. It has to be a beer. And just use those three ingredients and make the best beer you can. So you guys helped me judge the championship round a couple weeks ago where we had, they were required to use New Zealand Pacifica hops, ginger, and rye.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't sound that complicated. But
and the diversity was incredible.
You can get a lot of diverse beers, and the creativity that comes out of them is amazing. I mean, one guy even put jalapenos in it too, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's been such a kind of a community, event, within these online homebrewers, where we get the championship round for each round that we do, we have everybody do a live tasting on an internet radio show. And it's just a lot of fun. Everybody gets to taste and actually judge everybody else's beer in a competition. I mean, what homebrew competition do you actually get to taste and judge
everybody
the beers
else's.
That also in there. I mean, it's really creative. It's really a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of good camaraderie, good feedback, and you know, people are really responding well to it. And we've been doing it now for 4 years, going on our fifth year. Probably start up a new one in January.
And on that note, we're going to take a pause for a friendly commercial break, and we'll be back with more details on Iron Brewer.
Awesome.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA, designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here in the studio with our good friend Peter Kennedy from Simply Beer and also the founder of the competition Iron Brewer, and which has been going on, you said, 4 years?
4 years now.
Oh, four sessions.
Yep, starting our fifth year. We'll be starting up in January again with a new round.
Tell us how that works exactly.
So the preliminary round, I'll put out the three ingredients, and then just like any other homebrew competition.
Is that an open call? Is there a cap?
It's an open call. We cap it at 60. Maybe you'll go to 70. Depends on how many entries we get, you know, the demand. Mm-hmm. But we try to keep it small. We get a lot of good feedback coming back to everybody from their beers. But first round, preliminary round, is, you know, you send your beers into me, and we'll have a judging. We'll score your scores, send it back. And then the six top scores from that preliminary round then go on to the championship round with three new sets of ingredients. So now you got to brew a second beer. Do those. It's about 8 weeks for each round. After the 8 weeks, we'll judge. In the championship round, we add in the competitors get to judge everybody else's beer. So
they mail all their beers to each other.
They mail all their beers to each other. So that's why there's only six people in the championship round.
Right.
It does get expensive mailing beers out and so forth, so we try to eliminate that as much as possible. But, you know, there's, you know, a good bit of prize money and so forth in the end. We have some good sponsors that have helped us through the times here.
And if people are interested, what's your website?
It's ironbrewer.com.
Excellent.
You can find out all the information there, and you can always email me, too. I'm on Twitter, Facebook.
As what? As Simply Beer?
Simply Beer.
Simply Beer.
Simply Beer.
What are some of your favorite ingredients or results of the ingredients that you've kind of done over the four? So you've done four.
Right. I think cardamom was one of the ingredients that I've now brewed with a bunch of times since. Pistachio is another one that I haven't used in Iron Brewer, but I kind of got inspired from another round and decided to do pistachio. I did a pistachio stout. Must have been 2 years ago now.
We love that stout.
I actually judged that at a homebrew alley and had no idea. And we going in, because we didn't know who brewed it, but But we were like, pistachio stout. And I was thinking in my head, I'm not sure about this. And it was delicious. So
that was a fun beer to do. And mm-hmm. and I used pistachio extract. So just a word of why. Whenever you're using an extract, they're extremely potent.
Yep.
And so what I did was I took, basically, I had like 8 glasses of about 4 ounces apiece and was using a dropper and putting the amount of pistachio extract in each one, see kind of where it would fall.
Mm-hmm.
And, I eventually found the right ratio that I wanted. And that's what I entered into the.
Yeah, I thought that's really. I didn't know what to expect from it, and I thought that's a great combination.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was good. The chocolate and the pistachio. And, you know, you got to be a pistachio fan first.
Yeah.
You know, because it definitely speaks pistachio.
Yeah. Like ice cream, like pistachio yep, exactly. ice cream kind of thing. The sweetness of the stout, and yeah. So let's talk about the other thing. So whenever I go anywhere where that they're serving homebrew, like at Past Beer Fest that served homebrew, and I see Peter Kennedy's name, I know, all right, that's one of the first beers I'm going to have because it's probably going to run out, one, and it's probably going to be really interesting and really good. The other thing is you have a gorgeous jockey box you bring. So, and it's not your first jockey box that you build, right?
No.
This has been a path to jockey box perfection. So let's talk about that.
This is the fourth iteration of my jockey box, I think. So I started off many years ago with this massive, giant Coleman or igloo. Cool. It was like a 72 quart. You know, it was like 8 feet long, and I used PVC, not PVC, beer line tubing.
Okay, yeah.
I used beer line tubing through it, like 100 feet of it in there, and you know, it actually worked pretty well. And then I was like, this is just too big. I gotta reduce it down, and I reduced it down to just another plastic igloo cooler like everybody else sees, and the coils are too long, so then at that point I went to a plate chiller setup, which was really nice. Brought that out camping once, and somebody left the tap open while it was in the back of my truck. Beer all through my truck. So at that point,
like
now,
in the back seat of your truck,
in a trunk area.
Okay.
But still, it's all upholstered, yeah. And so forth, and so that was a mess. So now my jockey box got drip trays on it. You know, it's a stainless steel Coleman cooler, hand blown glass tap handles, which everyone loves. Purelick taps. I mean, you know, it's been a process, an ever evolving, you know, upgrade, bits and pieces, and it's been a lot of fun to put together. I love doing DIY.
Yeah. The other thing that you have, you played with, like where you put your taps, correct? Because I remember having a discussion about this. So what would you, for somebody that's building their first jockey box, what are some tips that you, or, you know, learnings
so,
from your experience?
Yeah. One of the biggest things that always angered me about jockey boxes was the inlets were on the backside of the box. So if you're serving at an event, well, you have these two, you know, lines coming out of the back of your box, and I never liked the way it looked.
That are the front of the box for anybody getting it from you.
Yeah.
And then if you have, you know, I also do events where, well, not events, but parties where it's my box is self-serve. You know, you go up and you pour it. So you don't want taps coming into the front either. So I figure we'll put them on the sides, and that seemed to work really well, cut the difference between both ends. And, you know, as well as, you know, the size of your box for the number of taps you want. You know, don't go too big, don't go too small. You know, you want to make sure you can fit all the taps that you want to have on your box. Where are you going to use it? I mean, really, that comes down to it. You know, I tend to use mine in, you know, three different types of occasions: at my house for parties, out camping, and then also, you know, camping trips a lot of fun. Imagine. And then you know, at you know, events where I'm pouring beer, so. You know, for me, I needed a kind of versatility in my box,
mm-hmm.
and I think that I got that. You know, I got the smallest size I could get that would fit my chill plates. And the reason why I have chill plates is that getting the stainless steel coils, I'm not going to fit 4 taps on a small box.
Right.
You know, you're only going to get 2, right? Unless you go really small on the number of coils you have, or you can bend them yourself, which.
Or stainless steel.
Yeah. Right. Could be a problem.
I'd also say just another tip, try and get a cooler that has a little plug on the bottom so you can empty the water as you're filling it up with that. It's going to be for a long
definitely.
Time.
Definitely. And the nice thing about the Coleman, it actually has a little channel through the middle of the on the bottom. So all the water goes right down into that drain hole.
So it drains easy.
And so it drains nice and easy, and they can get the stuff out at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's a big help.
It's always good to be able to get out easily.
Yeah. Break stuff down quickly. So what else? What are some of the favorite beers that you've brewed? I mean, we've talked about some of your really interesting, inventive beers. You've done some barrel aging, I know.
I've done some barrel aging.
Some probably sours, I believe.
The most interesting one I did lately was I'm a big scotch and bourbon guy. I love it. Especially the peaty scotches. Laphroaig is one of my favorites. So I kind of did an homage to Laphroaig. I made a peat smoke porter, and then I aged it it was a very small barrel. I aged it for 5 days in a rye whiskey barrel.
How big was the barrel?
It was 7 gallons.
Okay.
But the problem was that after I aged it into the whiskey barrel, I lost all the peat smoke out of the beer. And so it was a very good barrel-aged porter, you know, whiskey, you know, nice and good. But I really wanted that peat flavor, so I ended up buying more peat smoke malt, doing like a little steep of that peat smoke malt, kind of getting it all nice and condensed there.
So like a basic peat smoke malt mash or tea.
Yeah, just basically made a tea out of the malt and added it right back into the
That's very cool.
The beer. And you know, for the first couple weeks, it tasted like crap. And then after about 2-3 months, we drank it 2 weeks ago. It was fantastic.
So you kegged it with your tea, right?
Yes.
So I'm guessing when you say it tasted like crap, like it was like too harsh?
It was really harsh and astringent.
Yeah.
It had that like those tannins that kind of real sharpness to it that I wasn't liking. I was really kind of disappointed. I brought it down to NHC and I refused to put it on because I didn't like the way it was tasting. And then, so I brought it back from NHC, and then 2-3 weeks ago, I tried it again, and it was great.
And you're still getting the peat, right? But you're not getting those, like, harsh phenolic tannin kind of things?
Yeah. So we got the peat, you got that whiskey flavor, and it was just really good. So I brought it camping, and drunk that weekend. It was nice.
we
have fun camping trips.
That sounds like the perfect beer for camping, too.
It was. It was good, along with all the steak.
Yeah. We did a continued education program for on peat smoke or not on smoked beers, you know, for the BJCP thing, and we did a lot of teas with malt. So if you're trying to get to know your malts or different smoked malts, is that tea thing is a really cool thing for homebrewers to do. And
one of the things you'll see is that your malt, the older it is, the less smoky flavor you're going to get, it tends to lose its smoke. Because if you open up, if you have in a closed container, you open up, you get all the aromatics, even if it's in a sealed container. And so you know that's dissipating. So, you know, somebody says, you know, never use more than, you know, 4 ounces of peat. Well, maybe you need to use more, depending on how old the malt is, how aromatic it is. You know, taste it, try it.
Absolutely.
You know, and it definitely changes. Just because a recipe says to use one thing doesn't necessarily mean the ingredients you have are going to meet those standards. You know,
I did a poster on our smoke beer project, BGCP Continuing Ed Project, and that was a homebrew shop owner came up to me. This was 2 years ago at NHC. And that was he said, man, smoke malt, you know, I get in bags and sometimes they're super fresh and really intense, and other times I'll open it and it won't be anything the same. So I think that is something that you really have to getting some experience with it so you know how much you need to use.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I'm really trying to do a lot of now is low ABV beers.
Yes.
I love beer. I hate getting drunk. Yeah. And I like to drink beer, and I hate getting drunk. So now I've been working on a series of different beers that are sub 4% alcohol beers, a brown ale, an American wheat, and a pale ale. And it's a lot harder than it sounds. You know, you can't just take a recipe and cut the malt base. You know, it just doesn't work. And filling in the blanks with, you know, more malty grains to make up the difference, higher fermentation temperatures to keep some sweetness, higher bitterness to counteract the sweetness to get so you have the mouthfeel, but you don't get sweet, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's just an ongoing process. It's been a lot of fun. It's a good learning process.
Well, we're interested in hearing more about that in the future.
Before we go, because we do have to go, Simply Beer.
So soon?
So soon. I know. It's a quick 2-15 minutes. Simply Beer is what?
Simply Beer has kind of evolved into a website on homebrewing. A lot of DIY, a lot of my problems making beer. A
lot of recipes.
A lot of recipes. I have not put many up lately, but there are a lot of recipes
we
up there.
We featured, I think, your recipe in our very first episode, yep. I think, when we gave a quick 101 on extract brewing.
Cool.
Yeah.
It was a lot of extract recipes. I was a big extract brewer for many years before I went to All Grain. But there's a lot of stuff up there, a lot of good stuff for homebrewers, and if you want old beer reviews there, beer reviews from 4 or 5 years ago up there, too.
Well, we'll put those links on our site, which I am going to update by tomorrow night, I promise.
I believe her.
Yep. Anyway, thank you so much, Peter Kennedy.
It was a pleasure.
Next week, we have
Joshua Bernstein
and Greg and Jess from YUS talking about the next private collection.
Very excited about that.
YUS, the sponsor of Iron Brewer.
Hey, all right.
Those are great guys. It's a great yeast company. So thank you guys so much for listening, and please tune in next week. We're live at 7 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Foment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.